Next case is 97-1394, Mohammed Zain Akhal versus Samir Musa El Shafi. Justice Resnick has recused herself from this case. We're pleased to have sitting in place of Justice Resnick, Judge Scott Wynn, who is the judge of the Court of Appeals sitting in the Fifth District. Mr. Scullis.
Good morning. May it please the Court, on behalf of the appellants in this case, my name is Michael Scullis, and we have been out on the table of the CJ Silver, Jr. I would like to reserve the room for these 2 minutes for the vote, and I will try to track my time. This is a relatively, unusual case. A matter of first impression for this court. It's an appeal of a judgment of approximately $22,000 in favor of the appellee in this case for time, effort, and expenses in representing my client in consummating a marriage with a woman named Musul Abul from Lebanon. In April of 1994, my client, who's known as Dr. Sam Shady, and I'll refer to him as such, decided to take a restful vacation to his homeland in Lebanon. In the 10 days that he was there, he married a woman that he did not know when he left this country. He was jailed for marrying that woman. He divorced that woman. And when he left Lebanon, approximately the 25th of April, 1994, he had made arrangements to marry two other women. My vacation pales in comparison to Dr. Davis. And that's where the problem begins. This case focuses on the efforts of the appellee representing Dr. Shafi in consummating a marriage with a woman named Crystal Hockle, who happens to be the appellee's niece.
Counsel, one of the key points for me that I'd like you to expound on is their argument that these decisions to marry had already been made, and subsequent to the decision being made, all Apple did was perform the function similar to a wedding consultant. He helped finish out the deal. Therefore, it simply was somebody hiring a wedding consultant. The decision to marry and that point is a little fuzzy in the fact. Could you give me what you think your version is or your response to that?
I will admit that the facts are fuzzy in the record. I think if we look at the facts as they happen, and try, there are some very entertaining and interesting facts which are not necessarily relevant to the issue at hand, which occurred before the key point, which is that April 25th, when my client left Lebanon to come back to Toledo's home. At that time, as I indicated earlier, there were two powers of attorney that he had given to the appellee, one to marry Russell Apple, the other to marry Rolla Apple. On the 15th, now, at that time, neither my client nor these women had decided to go through with the marriage proposal.
But he had already contacted both women, he had already laid out a proposal to both women, and he already had an offer as to both women as to which would accept before he left?
Before he left, that's right, because he had given the appellee power of attorney to stand in for him to be the groom.
But not to make the choice, just to stand in when the women made it.
Correct.
Apple didn't make the choice as to which women.
No, he did not. But the fact that I was getting to was on the 15th, but the record indicates this when you look at the testimony of the appellee, on the 15th of May, a telephone conversation took place between the appellant and appellee. At that time, it was decided, my client decided he wanted to marry Whistle. And that decision was made, because of course when he left Lebanon, he was not married. And the record is clear on this point, that the appellee told Dr. Shafi, listen, I'm spending a lot of money here. I need your commitment to pay my expenses. And according to the record, and of course we're not going to dispute it, even though we disagree with it, the record indicates that there was consent, and then very shortly after that, the appellee borrowed $17,000.
But did Apple influence Wofford's decision? Is there any proof that Apple helped the spirit to Wofford, or was that decision made and then Wofford stepped in and said, hey, I gotta do all the time.
My client's testimony was that he was introduced to Whistle by Apple. That lease testimony is different, and of course the board did not find in favor of my client. Again, Whistle...
That's just a factual dispute that we
Correct. Can't really evaluate. That's exactly my point. So what I'm asking is that rather than evaluate the record, just look at what happened after that date. What happened when my client told Mr. Apple, okay, I want to marry Whistle. Immediately, he says to my client, well, I need this money. I'm spending money, and I'm going to need money to consummate this deal. Now, for him to go out and borrow $17,000 at that time, when there's no evidence up to that point he had spent a dime, certainly raises a question as to what exactly this money was for.
I thought he was told by that there was testimony, at least, that the defendant said, spend whatever you have to spend, essentially. This is important to me to get married, and so, go spend the money so that I can do this. Is that essentially what the evidence was?
I'll admit that the testimony was that, that we testified to that. However, then when you look at the record, this is on the 15th of May, they just made the decision to marry Whistle. What reason would there have been for the athlete to borrow $17,000? This is, mind you, this is a man who testified he made $500 a month.
But aren't you asking us to, as you know, I didn't hope to bring this case in because I didn't, it seemed to me it was factually oriented, and I haven't heard one thing yet that dissuades me from that. There were two stories here, and the jury heard the evidence and made a decision. What's for us to decide? What legal issue is there for us to decide here? We have to decide as a matter of fact, or as a matter of law, wouldn't we, on these facts, that this was a brokerage kind of marriage brokerage contract? Can we do that under these facts?
Yes, you can, Your Honor. You know, I'm not asking you.
What are your strongest facts?
The strongest facts, we believe, are those I just said, that when this decision was made to marry Whistle, the appellee went and borrowed $17,000. And then it just...
The appellee didn't bring Whistle and... The appellee didn't go find Whistle and say, I've got a prospective wife for you, did he? That's not the evidence, is it?
That's not the evidence that was accepted by the court.
He was off teaching, apparently, at his teaching job, and they met. And that's not a brokerage, that's not a marriage brokerage contract, is it?
We submit that, given the definition of a marriage brokerage contract, the efforts that Appellee undertook after May 15, 1994, did fall within the definition of a marriage brokerage contract. And you look at it, I mean, of course, there's very little Ohio law on the subject, but when you look at it, the restatements indicate that a marriage brokerage contract is an agreement between parties for a third person to get paid to bring about marriage. And the example in the restatement indicates someone who is paid by a third party who is paid for bringing about or promoting a marriage falls within those confines. The other definitions in the cases that I've cited are equally broad. Now, the Lucas County Court of Appeals, I believe, took a narrow view of this, and they said, much like you, Chief Justice Moyer, well, the evidence was different, and the jury didn't believe the appellant that the appellee introduced him to these women. Therefore, there can't be a marriage brokerage agreement.
Counselor, is this case really about $22,000?
Is this case really about $22,000? I would submit no, it's much deeper than that.
What relief, if you win, is given? I mean, isn't there $22,000 at issue here?
Yes, correct.
And that's all?
That's what the jury found, yes. And
so you're all the way up to the Supreme Court on this issue for $22,000. It doesn't have anything to do with the fact that it's a religious matter involved between these people.
My client is a very proud man.
I understand.
He understands.
I represented a number of them in Toledo. I understand that. That's why I'm asking you.
He understands the cost involved in bringing a case to this court. He understands what he stands to gain if he is successful in this case. He also understands what he has to lose if you find against him. It goes beyond the $22,000 that the jury had found against him. It's a matter of his pride at stake, where he believes that he does not owe this man anything. And as I said, the record indicates that when you look at what happened after May 15, what did Appley do? Did he bring about this marriage? Did he promote this marriage? And I would say every expense that he claims to have incurred, and that's the other thing, this trial proceeded with one piece of documentation to substantiate these expenses. One. And the jury found that Mr. Appel had expended $14,000 or thereabouts in phone calls and several other items of expense, which certainly we would call into question. That's why when we go back to look at what happened on May 15th, we see that this gentleman, he said, okay, I'm going to spend money and I'm going to spend money. I'm going to go borrow $17,000. For what? If he didn't stand to benefit from that agreement to go finalize the marriage, and then thereafter to make sure that he delivered this woman to Cyprus, to Dr. Chafee. And all of his expenses were directed to the goal of delivering this person to Dr. Chafee so he could take her back to Toledo to live with her as a man and wife. And there you have, I believe, the clearest explanation and clearest definition of what a marriage broker's contract should be. This was not a caterer. This was not a chauffeur or a limousine service. The purpose of every act undertaken by the appellee was to make sure that this marriage went through. And as he indicated in his complaint, and he doesn't really deny it, his efforts were to make sure this marriage was consummated. Certainly, the mere fact that they were married once the appellee stood in for Dr. Chafee meant nothing, especially when you look at the ease by which someone can be married and divorced in the country of Lebanon. That marriage was not legally binding and certainly not something that my client thought was completed until he met with her and took her back to America. So what did appellee stand to gain by this? Did he derive an economic benefit?
Let's back up. You said that the marriage was not legally binding until he brought back to the state. What rule of law, where did you get that?
Your Honor, the marriage was not consummated, even though it might have been legally binding in Lebanon. It certainly wasn't binding in the eyes of my client or in the eyes of Whistle.
In the eyes, it's different versus something that's on the legal world. The legal world, you can see that this was in fact a marriage in my life.
I would concede that it was a marriage that was recognized in Lebanon. Whether it was finalized, I don't necessarily agree with, because you have a marriage by proxy, which I don't think you can do, at least in this country. Of course, we recognize the marriage, but...
Well, in the brief, they said it's the fact that World War II was a marriage by proxy.
I do not think, and I have not looked at this issue, I don't think you can marry somebody in this country by proxy. At least it's not it's not clear in the record other than the anecdotal references in the appellee's brief. Certainly my client didn't believe he was actually married. So it's just a formality. They went through the formal ceremony, but until they were... The marriage was dissolved by divorce in Lebanon, yes. So they were married in Lebanon. Whether or not, my view is that is a mere formality to the extent that they were several thousand miles away. Yes, it was. This was an arranged marriage. This was not like we in this country, in this state, typically go through an experience. This was an arranged marriage. These things, I don't think, happen in this country. They don't happen with much regularity. So the essence what I'm getting to is that this transaction was the delivery of this person was to my client, Dr. Shane, and that the athlete's efforts were directed to do that, and that when you look at a definition of a marriage brokerage contract, where one is to economically benefit, a third person is to economically benefit by promoting a marriage, I think you have it, notwithstanding the fact that there was a denial that this, that Dr. Shady was introduced to Whistle or any of these other women by the athlete. So it's clear when you look at this record that you have evidence to establish that, yes, indeed, not using a narrow definition of a marriage brokerage agreement, this is something which needs that definition. As I argued in the brief, I believe that the plaintiff is trying to use semantics to avoid the implications of what he's actually seeking. The complaint was initially filed when he indicated he was seeking damages for representing my client in obtaining a marriage. And there was a letter attached to Mr. Files to that effect. That was amended to expressly deny such an agreement. Getting back to what, whether or not Mr. Otto was economically benefiting from this agreement, there's testimony to the effect that he quit his job, had to rent a car for 4 months in order to finalize this deal. Certainly, the mere fact that this gentleman had received compensation, was claiming compensation for his time and effort, would be indicative of the fact that he stood to economically benefit from the finalization of this marriage. The record becomes even more interesting when you look at the items of expenses that are claimed with the complete lack of documentation. Question whether or not they existed, and if they existed, why they were incurred. Certainly, the athlete in this case acted to benefit to make sure that this marriage went through. I will reserve the rest of my time.
Thank you, Mr. Schoolis. Mr. Files.
Yep, that's broken.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That's a, it was a long time. Man.
This is a unique case, obviously. I was surprised when the court accepted it, since how many marriages are questioned that are conducted by a member, but I have a fairly large client group of Lebanese immigrants speaking from Lebanon who live in Kudur, and it's not uncommon for them to go back to the old country to obtain a wife. But I think there's only one issue in this appeal, only one issue that could possibly be, and that is under the jury instructions given without any objection, defendant here, and was there any evidence upon which the jury could have based its verdict for plaintiff Muhammad Akko upon either breach of contract or quantum merit for unjust enrichment? Number one, the defendant has not even spoken to the unjust enrichment argument. But the other thing is that he's trying to twist the marriage brokerage contract definition to cover items which is the court has already indicated, was an issue of fact to the jury. And in other words, he argued that to the jury that this was a marriage brokerage contract. The judge instructed the jury as to what a marriage brokerage contract was and instructed them that if they found that the evidence showed that it was a marriage brokerage contract, they would bring back a verdict for the defendant. They did not believe the defendant. He was the only one who testified, had no other witnesses. All of the witnesses who testified, other than the parties themselves, all agreed with my client as to what went on. Dr. Shafi didn't go back to Lebanon for quote a vacation, as opposing counsel was indicated in this court. He went back expressly looking for a wife. And he went back looking for a wife because he had talked to another gentleman from Lebanon who lived in Toledo and told him what a great wife he had. She had come from Lebanon. He said, boy, he wished he had a wife like her. And his friend said, well, there's lots of women, ladies like that back in my village in Bacaw Valley, Lebega. And so he said, well, let's go back. So he went back, and he was expressly looking for a wife. Absolutely no evidence of any kind of record that my client introduced him to anybody, but my client brokered an agreement between him and these women. Obviously, a broker is someone who arranges an agreement or convinces two people to enter into a contract. It has no evidence of that in this case. I think Justice Moyer hit the point on the head, and this is a factual issue case, and the jury decided the facts. The defendant doesn't like the way they decided the facts. He felt they should have believed him instead of all the other witnesses. They didn't do that. He raises a lot of straw men about, well, why did he incur these expenses, and why were they really legitimate expenses? I will point out that the record is clear that my client had receipts for all of those expenses. However, because they were not certified by the people who had given receipts to my client, even though my client identified receipts, the judge on the case refused to admit them over the objections of the defendant. The defendant now says, you didn't put any documents in to substantiate these expenses. My client had those, and they weren't put in because the defendant objected to them. That's like saying, hurry up and finish this investigation, but in the meantime, I'm going to stonewall all of the information you want. I mean, you can't have it both ways. I'd like to point out a few other errors, shall we say, in the briefs of the appellant. One, the appellant on page 15 of his brief states that clearly consideration of disagreement, that was the one between my client and his, was to find a felony crime. Absolutely no evidence in the record of that. In fact, as we point out in our brief, virtually all the expenses incurred were after the marriage occurred on May 19th. The marriage occurred on May 19th. And he says his client didn't believe he was married. Well, if he didn't believe he was married, why did he sign another power of attorney, which he signed up at the Lebanese Embassy in Detroit, to authorize my client to go through a divorce in Lebanon? You don't go through a divorce if you don't think you're married. The jury didn't believe him either. They also say that in his reply brief that we say on page 9 that we state that within 1 week of the appellant's departure from Lebanon, the appellee was concerned about the money he was spending on the appellant's behalf. He made that argument here also. That's absolutely false. Page 9, there are two different sentences. We say after the defendant and Aliaka were back in the United States, Aliaka is not my client, obviously my client is Muhammad Aliaka. Aliaka is a brother of Muhammad Aliaka who lives in this country in Toledo and is a citizen of the U.S. After the defendant and Aliaka were back in the United States for about a week, the defendant came into Ali's market and said that he was glad to have worked out with Rolla because he wanted to marry Whistle. Then the next sentence says, after Whistle agreed to marry the defendant, plaintiff called Aliaka, who then told the defendant that plaintiff was concerned about all the money he was spending on the defendant's behalf and wanted the defendant to send him money for expenses. And I cite the transcript, and I would like to point the court to that transcript, which is on page 322 of the transcript, page 261 of the supplement. And it says, now did you have any conversation with Muhammad on the telephone regarding, it says about 10 days later, after we came 10 or 15 days, Muhammad called me and he said, I've been spending money on the situation to marry you, the marriage papers for Samir, and he hasn't sent me any money. Can you tell him to send me money? I'm getting a loan for some people here. So that's not 1 week later. That's a week plus 10 to 15 days. That's anywhere from 2.5 to 3 weeks. And it was also close to the marriage ceremony. And again, testimony was that he paid what would be called bribes or hashish in the Middle East, and that is he reached the palms of various government officials to get this paperwork through. Had to drive to Beirut from the Cow Valley to look up the records and get the registration corrected. Each family has a registration of marriage and divorce and children and so on and
so
forth.
So that was part of the jury trial?
Yes, that was part of it.
Recouping funds for bribes paid?
Well, they don't consider bribes. We do here, but there it's just a cost of doing business with government. You know,
but that's what the jury heard. And
oh, yeah, the jury heard that, sure.
And conceivably awarded.
Yeah, and the defendant never objected to that, never said that that wasn't a standard of practice in the Middle East. I don't really need the rest of my time unless the court has some more questions. I think it'll be covered fairly well.
Well, Mr. Files, my only question is there... Do you think the law in Ohio is clear regarding the elements of a marriage brokerage contract? Do you think there's something that we should write on that issue to make it clear exactly what is a marriage?
Yes, Your Honor, I do. And as I say in my brief, I would ask this court to adopt the propositions of law which I propose under those general propositions which were submitted by the appellant, and that is that it clarifies either the ones that I've asked the court to adopt. For example, a marriage brokerage contract is one in which a third person is to economically benefit from a successful promotion or procurement of an agreement for marriage between two other persons. I think the past definitions, where it says agreement or procurement of marriage, is what's causing the confusion here. Brokerage is just like a real estate broker. The real estate broker earns his fee when he obtains a willing buyer willing to pay for the cost that the seller asks for. It doesn't occur when the deal is closed. It doesn't occur when the financing is approved. It occurs when he performs. And what that is, it's a broker's agreement between two other persons. So that I think that my proposed proposition of law clarifies that. In other words, it's successful for promotion or procurement of an agreement for marriage. Once you've got that agreement between the two parties, that's what you're overdone with. You complete the broker part. My client is not even involved in that part. And in fact, if you look at the record, LaSalle was introduced to the defendant, not by my client, who was out taking care of some other business at the time, but was introduced by Aliak to the defendant. And Mr. Shabi said he would, why didn't you introduce me to her? And Aliak said, well, you know, I didn't want to push my relatives on me. By the way, everybody has the name Ako. That's a common name in the village here. It doesn't necessarily mean that they're close relatives. They could be maybe even hardly any relation whatsoever. It's like Smith or something like that. So I think that would help do so. And I think that the third proposition, agreement from a promisee to merely reimburse him for services and expenses that incurred for legal recordings, ceremonies, communications, and travel with a promisor's spouse or fiance is not a marriage brokerage contract, any more than a limousine service that takes them to the wedding reception, or to the wedding to the wedding reception. Not a very appropriate contract. I mean, if you contract for that in this country, and suddenly let's say for example the wife, the fugitive wife doesn't show up. I want to have the bride say stand on the steps. And it doesn't show up for the wedding, does that mean that they're not obligated to pay for all those expenses that they've incurred, that they ordered, merely because marriage didn't go through? Absolutely not. It's not based upon marriage. Marriage is not a consideration of any of this. And had Mr. Shafi not gone through the marriage to Whistle, had he not come to Lebanon, and he still would have owed my client the money that my client went through getting the paperwork ready. In other words, let's say on the 15th of May when he said, yes, I want to marry Whistle, get all the paperwork ready, my client drove to Beirut and got all the paperwork arranged for a...
what do you suggest we should write? Does that form a complete? Is that the way you pledge the case? Is that the way
I think the
pleadings were at the time you went to the jury?
The pleadings at the time went to the jury were that he was asked by Dr. Shafi to perform the necessary paperwork and so forth to consummate the marriage. Consummate was a poor choice of term, because everybody thinks consummate is conjugal relations that consummate marriage. However, what was intended at that point was consummation from a legal standpoint. In other words, getting the license, shall we say, permit to marry, getting the proper people involved, getting the recordings and all that stuff. That's what we were talking about.
So what did the jury get to decide in order to award them? What legal question did the judge put to them before they could award the funds?
They had to find either that it was not a marriage brokerage contract, and he gave them pretty detailed instruction on that, or secondarily, they had to find that my client was entitled to recover on a quantum merit basis for unjust admissions. In other words, there was evidence that Dr. Shafi could have done anything my client did himself, and he wanted to spend time in Lebanon doing so. He did not want to do so, the testimony was, because he had a business to get back to, and he had his children to get back to. And so he wanted to go back to the U.S., and that's why he asked Mom to do this for him. So that he saved all of his own time, plus the expenses, and it was testimony that many of the expenses that were paid, my ex-client asked for reimbursement, such as the fees to various people, the fee to the shed for conducting the marriage ceremony, the registration fund lot. Dr. Shami would have had to pay himself from this effort.
Okay, who paid for the two trips to Cyprus?
The first trip to Cyprus was to obtain a visitor's visa for the wife. And the reason they had to go there is because the U.S. doesn't have an embassy in Lebanon. You can't kill them, they had to go to Cyprus. They went to Cyprus for that. The embassy there would not give her a visa because they didn't have Dr. Shami's income tax return. They had to have some evidence that he was financially capable of supporting her. She was not going to come to the U.S. to go on welfare, I guess. So then they went back to Lebanon. They called Dr. Shami from Cyprus and said, Dr. Shami, we need this information. So Dr. Shami said he would send copies of his income tax return so he had ample income to support his wife. When those papers then did come, then they went back to Lebanon and in Lebanon, or back to Cyprus, and Dr. Shami met him in Cyprus. Whistle told him that her parents told her that she was not allowed to touch her until she was able to get her back into the United States. They didn't want her to have any kind of relations with him on Cyprus, and then maybe he'd not be happy and leave her in the village. Wanted him also to come back to the village in Lebanon to have a ceremony, have a celebration of marriage, which is traditional in the country. And the testimony was that Dr. Shami told him he would do that. He would meet her back in Lebanon. So she did not speak English, by the way. She only speaks French and Arabic. My client went back with her to the village in Lebanon. He never came back. He took his money back to the U.S. And then he called and said, his opinion was, I got screwed. That's the exact quote of words. And I'm not going to pay anybody. He didn't deny it. My client spent this money. Back in the meeting, the testimony, well, the other witnesses who were there, he acknowledged the expenses that my client had incurred, but he said, get them from her family. I'm not going to pay. He didn't deny the expenses. It's an interesting case, I understand. Any other questions?
Thank you, Mr. Files. Mr. Spillett, you've saved almost problem. 2 minutes of your time.
That's right.
Just a couple of quick points to address Mr. Files' argument about the exhibits that allegedly documented these expenses. Those exhibits, which were not introduced in the record, were two evidence, are part of the record here, and certainly they're available for your review, and you will find them to be worthless because they are basically post-dated statements in Arabic with an American or English translation, which indicates X number of dollars were spent. There's no details at all to describe or explain what those expenses were about. So that's why.
Counsel, the chief has probed this. What's going to be the Silva's law in this case if you win?
I would ask the Silva's be the definition of the marriage brokerage contract found in the restatements, which is a contract to pay a third person for bringing about marriage is illegal. And as a subheading, the holding from the Crawford versus Russell case, New York case, that a claim for advancement of money and expenses incurred during procurement or promotion of marriage between third persons is not enforceable.
That takes out the quantum merit.
Right, I can't, Your Honor, I don't understand how quantum merit applies because I can't understand how my client was benefited at all by any of these things. I don't see it. There's indication in the record to that effect. This is not like somebody paints another person's house and doesn't pay for it. It's so speculative what benefit my client derived. Any of this. Remember, he was in Lebanon once, he was in Cyprus once. He has some expenses on his end too. And then to come back to meet with Mr. Rockwell and to be given a bill for $20,000 certainly was something my client did not agree with. I would close by simply indicating that we do not want this court to reweigh the facts. We know the court can't reweigh the facts, but when we look at what happened after the 15th of May, when this whole conversation took place, where there was an agreement that if my client declined, then it's questionable whether or not anything would happen. But once that go-ahead was given, then Mr. Ockham went and spent the money to deliver this person to Mr. Rockwell. And that was his goal, and I would submit that to pay him for delivering this human being to America as a bride in an arranged marriage is unenforceable. And we believe that constitutes a marriage brokerage agreement, and this court should enter judgment, reverse the judgment, and enter judgment to my client.
Thank you, Mr. Scholes. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.